Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashbery. Tonight on Life Rattle number 1272, we feature a classic story by Elizabeth Clark. Our writer tonight, Elizabeth Clark, was born in 1961, the second of six children, in Campbellford, Ontario, a small farming community 2 hours northeast of Toronto. Clark grew up in Campbellford until 1981, when she went to college in Peterborough. She worked in correctional group homes for several years before switching her field to nursing in 1988. Clark moved to Toronto in 1991 and worked as a nurse in hospitals and private health care till 2002, when she and her partner Peter bought and moved into her old family home in Campbellford. Clark now works full-time as a registered nurse at Peterborough Regional Healthcare Center. Elizabeth Clark writes about rural Ontario. Ironic stories about a young woman who dekes her way around the traps of a dysfunctional family and oppressive small town mores to ditch the cruel pettiness of that life. So let's listen now as Elizabeth Clark reads her story on Life Rattle. And please be advised that many of the stories aired on Life Rattle contain language and situations that some people may find offensive.
Chris, or College, by Elizabeth Clark. December 15th, 1980, 11:30 a.m. I sit in Mr. Hubbard's office. Mr. Hubbard is one of two guidance counselors at Campbellford District High School. Mr. Sherry, my English teacher, informed me when I arrived for class today that I'd be spending my English period with Mr. Hubbard. Mr. Hubbard is outside the door talking to Mr. Gilley, the principal. Speaking in low, muffled tones, I can't hear what they're talking about through the partially closed door. I lean forward in the wooden armless chair. I can see Mr. Gilley's long, skinny legs through the crack in the door. He wears those checkered golf pants all the time. God, he's skinny, I think. He looks like a skeleton wearing clothes with wire-frame glasses. I wonder what Mr. Hubbard wants. I haven't done anything wrong. Why did he call me to his office? I fidget nervously in the chair and twist the tarnished gold chain hanging around my neck that holds my boyfriend's class ring until it cuts off the circulation in my index finger. I let it go and look down at my fingers, red, bitten off to the quick, nails. Why doesn't he get his ass in here and tell me what's happening? What are they discussing? Career and psychology books and college calendars line one whole wall in the small windowless office. Walls paneled with reddish-brown boards make the office seem dark. Papers and files sit neatly stacked on the desk. A black cup on the desk holds pens and pencils. A black telephone with many buttons sits next to the stacks of files. Two photographs in silver metal frames sit by the phone, one of a dark-haired woman, the other of two children, two girls, maybe 10 or 11 in age. A small table in one corner of the office holds a short, fake Christmas tree with lights and a typewriter covered with a green plastic dust jacket. A small landscape painting with a river running through it hangs above the typewriter. There are two chairs, one big, soft blue armchair on Mr. Hubbard's side of the desk and a small wooden one I sit on in the other side. Hanging on the wall next to the desk are large frame graduation certificates. University of Toronto, Masters of Social Work, and another one from Teachers College. Sorry, Elizabeth, for the interruption. The sound of the baritone voice makes me jump. Mr. Hubbard closes the door and walks to his desk and sits in the blue armchair. A tall, obese man, he wears a gray pinstripe suit, green tie, and thick, square, black-framed glasses, and a short, dark brown hair shaved close at the sides and flat on the top. "I thought you would have come to see me by now on your own," Mr. Hubbard says, leaning forward in his chair, folding his hands together on his desk. His glasses slide down his nose, and he watches me over the top of them. "Why? I'm doing okay. I don't need guidance," I tell his folded hands, then lift my gaze to see Mr. Hubbard staring at me seriously over his glasses. I look down at my own hands tightly clasped in my lap. "This is your last year of high school. We need to discuss your future, your plans for the coming years. What are your plans?" I look at him without lifting my head. He's still staring at me over his glasses. What does he want from me? What does he want me to say? I look back down at my hands clasped even tighter. "Elizabeth, what are you going to do next year?" "Well, Mum wants me to come to work with her at the Warkworth Nursing Home. Chris wants to get married," I say without looking up. Lifting my head, I look at Mr. Hubbard's face. He sits with his elbows leaning on the desk, his face resting against two clenched fists. Putting his hands down, leaning back in his chair, he breathes out a loud sigh, then looks at the wall where his diplomas hang, and then at the photos on the desk, then back at me. "So what does Elizabeth want?" The question stuns me. Nobody ever asked me that before. I stare at the top of his desk. He sits quietly waiting for me to answer, but I can't think of anything to tell him. After a long silence, Mr. Hubbard says softly, "Do you want to get married?" "I guess. Chris and I've been dating for a long time, 4 years. I pick up the thick gold school ring with amethyst stone resting against my powder blue sweater and look at it. "Well, that doesn't mean you have to get married. You're only 18. "My mum was 18. That was a different time. And frankly, I think we'd both agree that didn't work out the best for her. I feel you have too much potential to be washing dishes in a nursing home for a living." I fidget uncomfortably in my seat and twist my long blonde ponytail between my fingers. I feel trapped. I look directly in his face. "Well, what do you think I should be doing with all my potential? You must have something in mind, or you wouldn't have called me here." He leans forward in his chair and grasps the corner of the desk. "College," he says firmly. With the index finger of one hand, he slides the glasses up his nose, then looks at me. "My parents have no money for college, and even if they did, I'm not smart enough to go. I only get B's and C's." "You get B's and C's without trying. Imagine what you could do if you expended a little energy," he says in an irritated voice, still leaning forward in his chair. Feeling angry, I fold my arms across my chest and look down at my Nike tennis shoes. "It's true," I think. "I never study. I read a lot, but none of it has anything to do with school." I wander into my tests with a let the chips fall where they may attitude. I never get less than a C, even in math, and that's my worst subject. The lowest I ever got was a C minus. "What about money?" I say, looking at him shuffling the papers around on his desk. "I have all the papers here for you to apply for a student loan." He holds out a form with OSAP printed on it in green letters. "You don't have to pay it back till you finish school. OSAP will help you pay for your tuition, books, and living expenses. You can stay at the nurse's residence in Peterborough, next to St. Joe's Hospital. The nuns run it. It's for women only. The rent's reasonable. You'll have your own room and share a common bathroom and kitchen. A bus picks you up right outside the hospital. You change at the terminal for the college bus. It's really easy. If you need extra cash, there's all kinds of stores at the malls you could get part-time work. You're just like everyone else, I say, hugging my arms around myself and looking at the floor. You have my life all figured out. I look at his face. He leans back in his chair, fiddling with a pencil. So why Peterborough? Why not Belleville? I have relatives there. Because I want your sister to go to Belleville. They have a better arts program there. She has a real flair for drawing. Oh. Well, what do you have in mind for me? I thought, since you don't know what you want, and you're not really sure where your talents lie, you could take a general program for the first year. It'll allow you time to explore your options. Why can't I explore my options in the general program at Belleville? I say, leaning forward in my seat, resting my arms on my lap and hugging them tight. I want you to get away from your sister, away from your parents, and away from your boyfriend. You need time to find out who you are without being compared to your sister, and without the demands being placed onto you by your parents and boyfriend. You spent your whole academic career in the same grade as your younger sister. Teachers compared you, other kids compared you, and your parents have compared you. I think at some point early on, you realized you couldn't compete, so you just quit trying. I'd like you to see what you can achieve on your own merit. Give it 2 or 3 years. That's not a long time. You'll be 21. If you want to marry, then marry. Give yourself a chance to find yourself first. Find out what Elizabeth wants, what makes Elizabeth happy. I listen to him talking and look at the floor. I feel heavy with sadness. Chris might not want to get married after I'm gone so long. Well, Chris is not the only man out there. Who says after 3 years you'll still want to marry him? Maybe you'll meet someone else. Feeling angry again, I look him directly in the face. His glasses have slid down his nose again, and he watches me over the top. You're trying to break us up. No, I like Chris. He's not the one I'm concerned about. You're so much more than you give yourself credit for. I hate to see young women with such potential settle for menial jobs and marriage without even giving themselves an opportunity to find their own identity. I see it all the time in these rural schools. You girls sell yourself short. He picks up a bundle of papers in a file folder and hands them over his desk to me. I reach out and take them. Take these papers home. They're for college admission, loans, and residence. If you have trouble filling them out, I can help you. They need to be submitted to me by the 15th of February. I look at the huge bunch of papers. I feel pressured and confused. Here's the calendar describing your course. I bookmark the pages. Mr. Hubbard hands me the yellow college calendar with an emblem of a goat's head in brown printed on the front. Let the deed show, it says across the neck of the goat. You talked to my sister Heather already? Yes, and she was more enthusiastic than you. Now go on now, it's almost lunchtime. I'll see you later. Bye, Mr. Hubbard, I say, and walk out of his office, carrying the calendar and the file folder. I walk down the long corridor, past the principal's office and the library, down to the area of the school where the machine shops are. My locker is in the corridor off the wood shop and auto body shop. The bell rings. As I make my way through the halls, the corridors fill up with students going to their next period or lunch. I turn the corner into the technical area. Both sides of the corridor are lined with lockers painted alternately red, orange, and yellow. Big glass doors at the end of the hall leading out to the parking lot. The hall is brightly lit from fluorescent lights in the ceiling and the light from outside. The janitor has buffed the floor till it shines, but there's mud stains around from slush and melting snow off students' boots. A cold draft from the students going in and out the door make me shiver, and I wrap my arms around myself. The smells of fresh-cut lumber and oil hang in the air. My locker is halfway down to the glass doors, number 53. Chris is leaning against it, his brown wavy hair cut short on top and the sides and collar length at the back. He wears this red and white leather Campbellford Cobras team jacket, Levi's, and Nike tennis shoes. He smiles and waves when he sees me. I whip out a half-hearted wave and force a smile. "How come you weren't in English?" he says, as he moves away from my locker so I can open it. "What's all this shit?" he says, tipping his head to see what I hold in my hand. "I just spent an hour with Mr. Hubbard talking about my future." Chris nods and says, "Yeah, I had to do the same thing last week with Wilson. I threw that shit in the garbage." I pick up my combination lock, one full clockwise turn 15, then to 33, back to 10, and pull. I open the door, throw the college stuff up top with my books, and pull out my paper bag lunch. My denim jacket hangs on the hook at the back. I take it out and put it on, and do up a couple buttons. "Let's go out to my car and eat, listen to the radio," Chris says, putting his arm around my waist. "Okay," I say, reaching up, my jacket sleeves and pulling my sweater down, then pulling my ponytail out from inside my jacket. We walk, holding hands, to the glass door leading to the parking lot. I open the door of the beat-up brown Chevy with rust spots on the door and slide into the passenger seat. Chris starts the car for heat and tunes the radio into checks in Peterborough. Helen Reddy blasts out, "I am woman." I take my bologna sandwich out of the bag. The ketchup seeps through the sides like blood. I feel sick. I put it back in the bag. "Don't you like your sandwich?" "Give it here, I'll eat it." "You can have my ham sandwich," Chris says. He hands the ham sandwich to me. I shake my head. "No thanks, I'm not hungry." "Well, you better have something. Do you want my apple?" he says, handing me his green and red bruised Macintosh. "I have an apple in my bag, I'll eat it later." I watch as Chris eats half my bologna sandwich with ketchup in three bites, then wipes the ketchup from his hands onto his jeans. "So what's wrong with you?" he says, looking at me. "What would you think if I decided to go to college in Peterborough next year?" I say, looking straight ahead at the door where we came out. A few students mill around in front of it. "I wouldn't like that at all." "You don't need to go to college. We're getting married." "I thought you were going to work with your mom," Chris says, looking straight ahead with his hands resting on his legs and a frown on his face. "Mom wants that. Mr. Hubbard thinks I could do better than that dishwashing job," I say, watching the expression on Chris's face. His expression relaxes. "You don't have to take that lousy job if you don't want to, if that's what's bugging you. We can get married sooner, and you can move in with me and my family. I can take care of you. You don't need to work." Chris gobbles up the rest of my sandwich and gives his hands a couple more swipes across his pants. "We could get married later, after I finish college," I say hesitantly. I look at my shoes, knowing his reaction and fearing it. "Fuck college! God damn that fucking Hubbard! He's just filled your head with bullshit!" Chris glares at me with narrow, angry eyes, face flushed, veins standing out on his neck. "You're going to marry me when I say, or it isn't going to happen," he says, pointing at his chest. "I don't need some college-educated bitch for a wife," he says, pushing his face close to mine. I need a wife who knows her place. I turn away. Chris's anger makes me uneasy. He slams his hands on the steering wheel. We're going in that school right now. Get that shit out of your locker and trash it. In June, you're marrying me, he says, pointing at his chest again. Fuck, I don't believe this shit. Why are you hurting me? I love you. Haven't I always been good to you? He says, looking more sad than angry now, exhaling loudly, clutching the steering wheel. This isn't about you, Chris. It's about finding out who I am, I say meekly, looking at the floor. I'll tell you who you are, Chris says, shaking his finger in my face, looking angry again. You're my girlfriend, and in 6 months you're going to be my wife, he says, pointing his finger at his chest. Mrs. Chris Greenlee, that's who you are. I want to go to college, I say, almost in a whisper, still looking at the floor. I'm afraid to look at Chris's face when I speak, in case I lose whatever strength I have to argue. Chris clamps his hand around my arm and squeezes until I flinch from pain. He pushes his face close to mine and says, You tell me right now, it's college or me. You can't have both. I put my hand over the ring resting on my chest, break the chain with a yank, and throw the ring on the floor. The ring bounces under the brake pedal. I peel Chris's hand off my arm and open the door. Climbing out, I turn and lean in the open door. I want to go to college, Chris, I say quietly. I close the door and walk across the parking lot towards Ranny Street, rubbing my sore arm. Chris shouts at my back, You'll change your mind. You're going to be sorry. You'll come crawling back. Don't expect me to wait for you, you bitch. I turn. Chris stands outside the car. He slams his fists on the roof of the driver's side. A few students standing around the doors of the school stop to watch. They look from Chris and then look at each other and shake their heads. I call from across the parking lot. Chris, if I can't have both, if you make me choose. I throw my arms high in the air above my head like a gymnast who has just landed a difficult jump and shout, I choose college. A pained expression crumples his face, as if I'd stabbed him. Chris puts his face down on the hood of the car. I walk down Ranny Street crying. September 1981. I went to Sir Sanford Fleming College in Peterborough. Chris and I didn't get married.
That was Elizabeth Clark reading her story, Chris or College. That concludes Life Rattle number 1272. Arnie Ackman recorded Elizabeth Clark reading her story. My name is Virginia Ashbery. And Life Rattle returns next week with more stories. And Life Rattle is produced from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.